Unlike the guy in the video, though, I have zero carpentry skills. It would take way more than I could do to make a table like that. So instead, I opt for IKEA furniture. Any of you ever tried to build IKEA furniture? Yeah, it's a challenge, right? So when Kristen and I moved into our new apartment, we had this one dresser that was just a little bit too small to hold the contents that both of us owned, and so we needed a bigger dresser. The problem was even that small one was difficult to navigate into our apartment just because the hallways are narrow. And so we opted for the IKEA furniture, right? Because it comes in that box, so you can get it maneuvered in there pretty easily. It's amazing how much they can stick into that box. It's incredible. So we pulled it into our bedroom, and we opened it up. It's like adult Legos. And at the end, you get a piece of furniture. It's awesome. But it took us like 3 days, right? Almost everything is based on that same size Allen wrench, and they give you a little one that you never want to use. So we bought one of those drill bits and a little drill with the Allen wrench thing on it. It still took us 3 days to get that thing up. But finally, we got our dresser, and it was big enough. It was deeper. It was wider. We could fit everything we needed it to fit. It was wonderful. I'm moving my living situation next month, and I have to get it out of my bedroom. And sitting here today, I don't know how I'm going to do it. Either Kristen or I do. We have no clue right now. However, if any of you are really great deconstructing IKEA furniture, please come talk to me. But that's how life goes, right? We solve one problem, and a new one just pops right up. Someone failed to tell me in elementary school that being an adult was basically just dealing with one problem after the next. Like, that's all you do as an adult. Forget your education. You just have to deal with one problem after the next. That's all it is. And that's what we do in life. That's what we're stuck with. Every time we solve one thing, something new pops up. It's just a continuous cycle. Sometimes it's exhausting, but it's life. It's what we keep doing. And here we are in a new year, 2017. And last week, if you were here, Kent was really excited to talk about Christmas on Christmas Day. That was really fun for him. I am stoked to be able to talk on New Year's Day. I'll tell you why, because it gives me the perfect opportunity to do something I haven't had to do yet. That's this. I'm going to share with you today my favorite scripture verse of all time, my favorite one. I'll call it my life verse, the thing that I just keep going back to anytime I need it. It's always there. Now, normally, if I was seeing where you are and someone said, hey, I've got a mystery life verse, I would spend the rest of the sermon trying to figure out what it was, just sitting in the audience. I'll give you a hint. It's in the Old Testament. Good luck. But we'll get back to that in just a moment. First, I want us to understand a little bit about Jesus. Earlier this year, we were in a series in the book of John. We actually finished that up in March. And in the book of John, there's this really interesting section of chapters and verses, something that's not in the other Gospels. In the book of John, there's five chapters where Jesus takes his disciples. This is just before he's going to be arrested and crucified. He takes his disciples, sits them down, and just has like a download session. For five chapters, he is just imparting to them everything they need to know before he is crucified. And it's a lot of information. And Jesus, who typically speaks in parables and riddles, although he does that a little bit, at some points begins to speak unusually plainly, straight to the point, not beating around the bush. In chapter 16, he tells them some rather difficult things, and you can turn there if you want. I'm not going to have this on the screen, so we're going to use a paper Bible. I know that's so 2016, but we'll try it. So on page 753, in chapter 16, it starts with Jesus telling the disciples, they're going to kick you out of the synagogue if you follow me, if you follow my teachings. In fact, they're going to be people who want to kill you. And it's not just that they're going to kill you. They think that when they're killing you, they're doing God a favor. This is what is in store for you when you choose to follow me. He starts off chapter 16 like this. And the disciples have to chew on this, and they have to try to process what all this means. And then Jesus, at the end of chapter 16, verse 33, he says this, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. I tell you these things, things like you're going to be expelled from your community and people are going to hunt you down and try to kill you to bring you peace. Because, as we talked about a lot, especially this last Christmas season, peace isn't based on circumstances. It's not based on what other people are trying to do or how other people treat us. It's based on an understanding of who God is and how God operates in the world. And so Jesus gives the disciples two pieces of truth that it's going to be absolutely crucial that they hold on to, because for the rest of their lives, when they know these two things are true, it's going to help them navigate the dicey waters of life. And the first is this. In this world, there will be troubles. You will face troubles. That's not going to change. Jesus came and died, but on this side of heaven, troubles are still part of the deal. And the disciples would be foolish if they thought that after even the resurrection, that suddenly troubles were going to go away. And the other is this. Jesus has overcome the world. As people, what we typically do is we deal with what's directly in front of us, what we immediately see. And so in that process, oftentimes, we make one of two errors. The first error is this. God is not big enough to handle the trouble or the problem I'm facing right now. There is nothing past the obstacle that's in front of me. I cannot see how God is going to redeem this circumstance or this problem, so it's really just all my future has to offer is this trouble. That is an error. It's an error because Jesus has overcome the world. There is nothing too large for him, nothing that he cannot overcome. But the other error is to say this. I believe in God, I trust him, and so all of my troubles are going to go away. Tomorrow there will be no issues, there will be no problems. It's all going to be gone because we have a powerful God. While we do have a powerful God, that's directly against what he just told the disciples. In this world, you will face troubles. And so both are errors. When we assume that God cannot overcome the trial before us, and we assume that God is going to remove all trials from our lives. Both times, we miss out on something. Both times, we fail to realize what God is actually up to in the world. And this becomes very real when we hit a year transition. The date, January 1st, might be somewhat arbitrary, certainly is. Where we choose to mark New Year is just something we placed on a calendar. But when we hit this season, we start to think about all the big things in life. The things that happened in 2016, the things that will happen in 2017. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news or media outlets, but they really didn't like 2016. Like, seriously. New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all published articles saying why 2016 was the worst. David Barry came up with this list. He went through every month in 2016 to explain why every month in 2016 was worse than the one before it. It was incredible. For many people, it had to do with the election, but even if the election went the way you want, I mean, Princess Leia? Come on. But even in the midst of all of this negative talk about 2016. You know, there are some positives. Certainly worked out for me. I got married in 2016. I did all right. Yeah, I know. Well, thanks. Thank you. That's good. But you know, regardless of that, actually, it was the Washington Post who came out with their own counter article, which said, stop calling 2016 the worst. Because, you know, there's a lot of good things that are happening, too. We don't necessarily know that because sometimes with the way that the media works, we don't see the good stuff. So for instance, it was projected that in 2016, we would be, for the first time in recorded history, having a universal global extreme poverty rate under 10% of the human population. For the first time, based on the World Bank's metrics. That crime in the United States has actually been steadily declining, and it probably declined in 2016. We'll see how the numbers shaped up. We don't know these things because the news stories tell us all of the bad, all of the extreme bad. And there's still plenty of bad. It's not like by solving extreme poverty, we've solved all poverty. It's just one more step. But we sometimes miss the good things because the news media is biased toward the negative ones because, well, that's catchier. For instance, this morning, I was flipping through a news site and there was one of those bait headlines that said, "Could this ingredient in your coffee be killing you?" You'll have to tell me what the ingredient is, because I clicked past it and continued drinking my cold brew, so I don't know. All right? But that's what happens. That's how our world works. The negative headlines are what grabs attention, so we hear all the negativity. So, of course, we heard lots of negative things about 2016, and that's the way that it happens. And so now we're faced with a new year, and we ask ourselves the inevitable question, will 2017 be better than 2016? And the way that a lot of people presented it, it seems like it certainly can't get any worse. Can it? I don't know. The question, is 2017 going to be better than 2016? Honestly, it's a poor question. It's not a good one. Because all of our answers to that are going to depend on external circumstances that we can't control. We're going to have to go back and evaluate everything that happened in 2016, evaluate everything that's going to happen in 2017 that we think anyway, and probably we're going to make one of those two errors. We're either going to assume that everything that happened is so bad it can't possibly get better, or we have this kind of almost silly hope that 2017 is going to make all of our problems vanish. And both are errors. We might ask ourselves, is there a resolution I can make? A resolution where if I do this one thing, it will mean that 2017 will be better. Is there a commitment I can make to my life to make 2017 better? And while we know that New Year's resolutions, while laudable, don't usually pan out. Usually by February, we find ourselves back in the same patterns we did before. These are poor questions. Will 2017 be better? Something I can do to make 2017 be better? These are poor questions. As Christians, there's a better question, one that we keep going back to, one that we keep looking at, and this is what sustains us and honestly makes us so weird to the rest of the world. A question that when we ask this, we reframe our lives to what's really important. But to understand the question, we have to go back to my favorite verse of all time. And it's found in Isaiah. Some of you might have already guessed it. I've seen a couple of these on social media today already. Isaiah 43, you're welcome to turn there if you'd like. Now, here's the thing. Before I talk to you about a verse in Isaiah, we have to remember this. Isaiah is a book of prophecy, right? Isaiah was a prophet from Old Testament times. And sometimes prophecy gets a little bit difficult for us to understand because we just don't deal with it very often. So as a junior high pastor, I would sometimes ask the junior hires this question. Do prophets deal with the past, present, or future? And almost inevitably, they would say the future. And I would say, wrong! It's all three. Prophets always deal in all three. Because a prophet isn't really concerned about what's going to happen in the future. That's only one part of their concern. Their real concern is to identify what are the characteristics of God that are always true, that were true in the past, that are true in our present circumstances, and yes, will be true in future events as well. These are the things that prophets were really concerned with. And prophets were so in tune with God, they understood his character so well, and they were had this connection with God that they could see things into the future because they understood something about God's character. And I don't know the exact relationship that prophets had with God, but it seems pretty remarkable. And they had a grasp on who God was in such a way that God gave them some special revelation to what would happen, and it was all consistent with God's character. Because God does not change. Our circumstances will. As a result, God is going to keep showing up to us in brand new ways all the time. Isaiah chapter 43, in verse 14, I'm not going to read it, but you get this. You get this sense that Israel is in exile, because they are, in Babylon. If they're not in exile in Babylon, they're back at home, but they're occupied by Babylon. And a lot of their friends are elsewhere. They're scattered. It's a really difficult time. Exile is not easy. And they want it to end. And Isaiah is speaking to the Israelites right where they are in their present circumstance. He's using some future language, but he's identifying their present problem. Exile and occupation. That's what's on everybody's minds. That's what they're concerned about. This exile and occupation is their current reality. And everywhere they turn, they have to deal with the repercussions of being a people who are occupied by somebody else, in this case, the Babylonians. And that weighs on their conscience. That's what they have to deal with every day. That's their present circumstances. If you go to verse 16, it says this. This is what the Lord says. He who made a way through the sea, a path through the mighty waters, who drew out the chariots and horses, the army and reinforcements together, and they lay there never to rise again, extinguished, snuff out like a wick. This is the past. This is the story of how the Israelites got out of slavery, out of Egypt. And on their way out, they encountered an insurmountable object, the sea, a giant body of water. And behind them was the army of Egypt, encroaching in on them. Any moment, they would be overrun and taken back into slavery because the obstacle in front of them was insurmountable. And into that insurmountable problem, God stepped in and parted the sea making a way for them. The Israelites, Hebrews at the time, crossed safely, while the Egyptian armies, as they came to the same spot, were crushed by the waves. The same God who did this with the Egyptians, the same God who knows about the Israelites' problems with the Babylonians, and it's the same God who's going to continue to show up. We just can't expect that it's always going to look the same, because circumstances change. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past, because the past doesn't inform what God's going to do in the future except to tell us who God is. But God's way of showing up sometimes is very different. We don't always know what's going to be. Sometimes it's a little bit of a mystery, because the circumstances are new, the trials are new, the challenges are new, and so we don't know what God's going to do in this specific moment. It probably won't look like parting the sea again, but it might be something just as miraculous. And that's why this is my favorite verse of all time. See, I'm doing a new thing. Now it springs up. Do you not perceive it? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland. God cannot be stopped. God cannot be stopped. Even if I can't figure out how to get my IKEA dresser out of my apartment, God cannot be stopped. Even if we don't trust the future of this country, God cannot be stopped. Even if we see in other places refugees and hunger and poverty, international crises putting us on the brink of war, God cannot be stopped. Even when the challenges and difficulties in our family are so great we don't know what to do about them, God cannot be stopped. Even when there's something in my coffee that might kill me, God cannot be stopped. Because God is bigger than anything the world has to throw at us. He always has been, and he always will be. So when you look at 2016, you look forward to 2017, we're tempted to ask questions like, is 2017 going to be better than 2016? Well, I don't know. If you're talking about external circumstances, maybe, probably not. 2017 is going to have its own troubles. I'm sorry. Is there anything I can do to ensure that 2017 is going to be better than 2016? No, I don't think so. Except maybe this. Try asking the right question. The question that Christians keep coming back to. The one that sustains us and kind of makes us actually look a little bit odd in the eyes of the world. And that question is, what is God going to do in 2017? What's God going to do in 2017? The world as it is, as beautiful and chaotic as it can be, what's God going to do with that? All the crazy political things in our country and abroad, what's God going to do with that? All the things in my life and my family's life that I just can't seem to figure out, well, what's God going to do with that? Because that question is what has given Christians hope throughout millennia, often in situations that were far worse or far more oppressive than we even find ourselves in today. What is God going to do with this? Because that's when we actually see God's power. When there's an obstacle that we can't seem to overcome, something that seems so insurmountable that's going to crush us, and God makes a way through it, that is when we see God's power in our lives. And 2017, for some of us, may bring peace. For some of us, it may bring chaos. But I believe, like I believed last year, that God is going to make something beautiful out of the broken pieces of whatever happens this year. And that's the act of God, the unstoppable act of God. That's a little bit strange, because while everyone else is having those conversations about external circumstances, Christians are sitting back and saying, yeah, all that stuff is really complicated and confusing. But it's not the big question. The big question is, what's God going to do with all of that? Because it's going to be beautiful. And if I might channel Isaiah this morning, the same God who delivered Israel from Egypt, who parted the sea and destroyed an army. The same God who saw humanity in its sinful state, loved us anyway, who sent his Son to live among us, to dwell with us, and then die for us, conquering sin and death once and for all. The same God who's carried us to this point, carried us through 2016, that same God who did all of those things in the past sees all of what is around us now. He sees our struggles. He sees our pains. He sees the country and the world in which we live. He sees our families, the people closest to us. And he sees all of what we do and desire to do with our lives. He knows our present. He knows our struggles today. So it shouldn't be surprising that in 2017, we hear God whisper to us, "See, I am doing a new thing. Do you not perceive it? It springs forth. I am making a path in the wilderness and a stream in the wasteland." And through those things, as the people of God, as people who have dedicated our lives to watching him work and joining him in that, 2017 can only be a good year because we follow the unstoppable God. God, this morning, we lay at your feet all of our concerns, all of our fears, all of our cares, all of the ways in which 2016 has burned us, and all the ways in which 2017 probably will too. And we put these before you because, God, you are bigger than anything that is happening in our lives. We acknowledge that there are troubles. We know that they're there and that they will probably always be there. But, God, we hunger to see you work, to see you make a path where there is no path, to provide resources where there's no resources, to move us forward because you are a God who cannot be stopped. And so not knowing how it's all going to work out, not knowing how you're going to show up in 2017, God, we still declare this morning that we trust you, that we follow you, and wherever you lead, God, that is where we desire to go. In your name we pray. Amen.